Welcome. You are listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at http://voicerepublic.com.
Blog Talk Radio.
Gosh, you are not going to believe what they are talking about on the Strong Stance.
Good evening back to us listeners, and welcome to another episode of the Strong Stance. As always, I am your host, Eli Strong, and we again have a great show for you planned tonight, hopefully one that will keep folks talking, as some of our previous episodes have. Tonight we're going to be talking about the concept of passing, the pluses, the negatives, what does it really mean, how do people see it, how is it benefiting our community, is it benefiting our community, or is it really just kind of hurting us as a collective? And to help me kind of discuss this, we have a very special guest co-host, and that is John Williams. John is the director of domestic programs at the Gay and Lesbian Victory Institute, where he trains and develops diverse LGBT leaders through Victory's numerous domestic programs, including the John Bonnet LGBT Leaders Fellowship, the Presidential Appointments Project, and the Victory Congressional Internship. John works with established and emerging leaders to provide them with professional development opportunities, expert advice, and to connect them with other leaders for mentorship. In 2013, John was named to the inaugural Trans 100 list, which recognizes trans people working for the improvement of the transgender community. Before joining Victory, he served as a policy assistant and organizer for the National Center for Lesbian Rights and as fellow with the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. John also serves as a national advisor on the steering committee of the Trans Advocacy Network, which is an alliance of transgender organizations at state and local level. He's originally from Joshua, Texas, and lives in the D.C. metro area with his wonderful partner, Pri, and their two dogs. John, thank you so much for joining us tonight. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. Glad to be here.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time out to kind of come on and talk about this. You know, John and I have known each other for a few years. We're both in the D.C. area. I was super proud of him when the Trans 100 list came out and able to kind of congratulate him along with our other friends that were on that list, and it was a major accomplishment. What was that like, kind of going through that process for the Trans 100?
It was pretty incredible and pretty simple all at the same time. The way that the Trans 100 list works is that folks from the community nominate trans people who are doing great work. I really have to give a huge shout-out to Tony D'Orse and to Jen Richards, who run the Trans 100 list. They're in the process of doing it again, and they're going to bring us a whole new list of 100 trans people who are doing amazing work around the U.S. to support the lives of trans people. So it was an incredible, incredible honor to be on the list, and I'm just so excited that it exists and that it's out there.
Yeah, I absolutely think that it was such a wonderful thing to kind of look through it and not only see the number of people that I know personally that I've already known has been doing so much great work, but also to see the number of people that I either hadn't heard of or didn't know of work that was going on. It was just really incredible, because I think it really brings to light a community of people that are working so hard that don't necessarily, folks don't always know what's really going on. So I agree with you. I just think it's an amazing thing to be in existence. So, you know, I said a moment ago that we're going to be talking about passing. And, you know, the concept of passing is just something that I feel like, you know, it's always, I don't know whether, and this doesn't necessarily apply to all trans people, but I feel like for a good portion of the last several years, and maybe for, you know, even longer, although the word, I don't know the word choice, how relevant or how frequent it's come up, but it feels like there's this growing need to really discuss passing both in the positive and negative ways. And it feels like very often that passing is kind of seen as this cornerstone of the trans community. You know, I'm not sure whether, you know, you're involved with some of the trans groups on Facebook and Tumblr and things like that, but not a day goes by that I don't get a notification where some younger trans person or someone early in the process is posting pictures, and the first thing they say is, do I pass, like every few weeks. And sometimes it's, I can understand the need for that validation, but sometimes I always kind of go, wow, I wish there wasn't that pressure. You already have so much to think about that you have to worry about that pressure. And, you know, I don't know when you were first starting, you know, your transition, whether it be socially or medically or legally, if you did what a lot of us trans folks do and go out and read blogs about the behavior and how you dress and your actions and your mannerisms and how to appear, you know, more like a man and how to pass easier. So what was your early experience with that concept of passing, or did you try to do things to help yourself pass, quote unquote?
Sure. I mean, I think passing is a really complicated idea, right? It's the idea that if I'm out in public, that other people can look at me and not know that I'm trans, right? That's what passing means. And I think there's this tension between the things that I did that made me feel good, right? The clothes that I wore or the way that I cut my hair that just felt really good for me as John. And then the fact
right.
that the things that felt good for me also may have made people more likely to think that I wasn't a trans person, which is a thing all, you know, on into itself. You know, I think I was talking to a friend of mine, a colleague of mine earlier today about this, you know, kind of getting ready to join the show. And I was telling them about this moment while I was in college. It was me and this one other kind of trans masculine person, and we were thinking about transitioning and trying to figure out things. And we were talking to a trans man who had transitioned, you know, maybe 10 years ago. And we were freaking out about the bathroom, right? We needed to, like, you know, men stood up to go to the bathroom. That, you know, there were these devices. You could get these Sanofi devices. Do we need to get them? Which ones? Which are the best ones? And the a little bit older trans man, a little bit more experienced, just said, he kind of shrugged his shoulders and said, yeah, I'm lazy, so I sit. And it was this moment where I was like, oh, I can not do this thing that everybody says you have to do to be a man and still be a man, right? Like, I could do this in a different way. So there were
right.
definitely times when I was really, really trying to figure out, like, what, and I'm using, you know, air quotation marks, like, what is a man? Like, what do I have to do to be a man? And then as I got a little more comfortable with myself and met really great role models like the one I just mentioned, I was able to get a little bit more comfortable with figuring out what made me happy. And sometimes I was not necessarily in conflict, but like what made me happy also just happened to be what made me look like I was passing more and what made me more safe.
Okay. Yeah. And see, that's the thing is that you bring up two, you know, you couldn't be more right in my opinion about it being a very complex issue. And I think that you brought up two very important things that may seem contradictory, but really they're kind of not, right? It's like one of the reasons why we put so much, and when I say we, I mean folks who at some point put some pressure on passing, is that, you know, we do it mostly for a safety sake, right? And so then there's the other part of it, which is like you're doing something to make yourself feel more comfortable. And I think that I kind of get where some folks are really obsessed with this concept of passing without really thinking into too deep of the concept itself, because they see it as, I want the world to see me as I feel, and I want to keep myself safe. And I understand those concepts, right? And to me, the hardest thing about passing being such a complex issue is twofold. One is the nature of the word itself, and the other is the concept of what passing actually means and who does that leave out. And so because, you know, we have a good, you know, chunk of time to discuss both of these, I really want to first kind of launch into the word, because you and I have had this discussion before, and about Janet Mock has written an amazing book. For those of you that are not familiar with Janet Mock, she is amazing. Like, she's done so much stuff, if you just Google her name. And she did a YouTube video that you actually sent me, and it was the concept that I was really thinking of when I was thinking of this topic, and that's that, you know, when you think about the word itself, the definition of the word passing, forgetting the concept, is really looking at, if you quote-unquote are passing, it means that people are seeing you as something that you aren't. Very similar to, you know, I've known African-American folks whose parts of their family could pass as white. And then I knew, you know, Jewish folks who they tried very much to pass as non-Jewish when their families were coming over into this country. And so it's this history of I'm trying to pretend to be something that I'm not in order to keep myself safe. But in reality, if you apply that to the trans community, that really reinforces the misconception that trans people are innately being deceptive. That, you know, when someone says, oh, you pass as a man, yeah, that's because I'm a man. I'm not pretending to be a man, but really I'm a woman. So, I mean, I'd love to obviously hear your thoughts about the word itself before we start diving in and pulling apart the concept as a whole. Like, how do you feel about that word passing regarding its history and the feelings that maybe you think or don't think about when the cis community kind of hears that?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot there, even when we're just talking about the word itself and kind of the connotations and the meanings and the feelings that I have. I mean, there was definitely a time, and you know, for folks who don't know me, I'm like 5'7"-ish. I have a beard. My voice has dropped. I've been fortunate enough and privileged enough to have top surgery, so I would be somebody who people would say traditionally passes. There were times when it was something that I was much more focused on. Now that I pass on a more regular basis, it's not something that I think about in the day-to-day, which is really a privilege. But when I first started transitioning, the idea of someone telling me that I was passing felt good. It was
right.
An affirmation that I was looking the way that I wanted to look. And as I have continued to transition and continue to live my life, I'll go to, because the name of, and by the way, I'm here as myself. I'm not representing the Victory Funder Institute, even though it's a great organization. But even as I go to events for my jobs in the LGBT nonprofit world, people will often assume that I'm a gay man. And when I say my partner, and then I say she, and then they're like, oh, she, and then, you know, it's just this kind of confusing and awkward moment. And then I often will just say, so I'm trans. And often the first thing that people say, and they think that they're being nice, is, oh, I would never know. Like, I have somehow successfully deceived the world into thinking that I am a cis man, that I was assigned male at birth, and that's what I was going for. And I think I could say that when I started to transition, that was kind of what I was going for. But as I started to feel more comfortable with myself and figure out, like, what people thought men should do and realize I don't want to do some of the things that men are supposed to do, then my goal became much more like I want to enjoy myself and feel comfortable in my skin. And so even though there are times when I absolutely have passing privilege and I absolutely am hoping that people recognize me as a man, that's not my end goal. My end goal is to feel comfortable with myself.
Right. And you know, and I think that's the struggle that a lot of people are kind of looking at, because obviously, you know, there has to be, and you know, I've read some blogs where some people try to suggest other words, like, we're not going to get rid of the concept, you know,
right,
necessarily, because it's this concept of, I looked like this and I want to look like this, and now that I have done XYZ and I look like that, I'm happy with that and there's nothing wrong with it. And I agree. It's not for everybody, but for the people that it is for, it's great. Now, I agree with you that when people want to be nice and they don't want to, they're not trying to offend you or anybody else, but when they say something like, oh, I never would have known, or, I mean, I've even had someone say, oh, my God, I just thought you were a guy, and I'm like, well, I am. You know what I mean? Like, it's those things where it's like, and the immediate reaction, of course, is, well, that's not what I meant, right? And so, you know, I think that I've read a lot of blogs where people try to suggest other words. Like, it's not that you're passing as a man, because you are a man. It's that you're being read as a man, right? Mm-hmm. Or they'll try to use other words in place of it to try to take the stigma out of, or to try to take the connotation of deception out of the name of the concept. But, you know, I think that the other thing that you kind of touched on as well is the thing about that you do have that privilege of being seen as a man in most places where some people don't. And I share that privilege. I also share the privilege of mostly being read as a gay man. I mean, there have been times at work when, you know, there will be somebody new that I've worked with, and this happened a couple of years ago with someone who's now a very dear friend, who we were all in mixed company and we were hanging out, and she had been working there for a little while and had made her own assumptions about me. And at one point I was talking and I said something about my wife, and, you know, we, after the happy hour, we went on our way, and one of them looked at the other and said, I'm so confused. I thought he was gay. And, you know, it was one of those moments where it was like, you know, I recognize, and I joke all the time that ever since I transitioned, I've stopped being flirted with or hit on by women, and now I only get flirted with or hit on by men. And I really don't care, because I'm taken one way or the other. It's flattering regardless. What you say to me after I tell you I'm trans isn't always flattering, but I definitely share that privilege with you. So, and it is tough, because you want to feel like, you know, when I was younger in my transition and people came to me and said, you know, oh, God, I never would have known. Or, you know, when there was the automatic assumption that I was male, no questions asked, it did feel good, because it felt like all the hard work and all the stress that I had been through before was either worth it, or that it was starting to subside and all of that kind of stuff. And so it was nice to hear. But then once you get past the, you know, it's almost like that triangle, and I always forget what it's called, but it's like that pyramid of basic needs, of that you take care of food and shelter first, and then you take care of this and that and the other, and final is self-actualization. Once we are not worried as much about our safety, right, or being seen as something that we maybe don't like in ourselves, or maybe even hate in ourselves, then we can start kind of dissecting the issues that surround our lives every day. And I've talked to so many trans guys, I don't know if you have a similar experience, that just like what you said, or what I'm saying, is that, you know, at first it was very important to me, but now I'm more important about what can I do to make my life a happy one, and how can I just be comfortable in my own skin. And I'm more worried about my marriage and my job than I am about XYZ. You know, do you feel like that feeling of yours, do you hear that resonated, you know, throughout the rest of the trans community with folks that you work with, that you're friends with, and things like that?
I mean, I think definitely there are some folks who have had similar experiences. But, I mean, I don't know if this is true for you, Eli, but it's definitely true for me. Like, some of the things that made me feel more comfortable were being able to take tea, were being able to have you know, medical services that affirmed my gender and my gender identity. And so passing is also inextricably tied, or is often just so tied to access to medical care, to access to just basically having money, right? Having a social safety net through your family or through your school or through some kind of institution. And
right.
So that means, like, folks like me who are able to transition, I don't think about the fact that I'm passing on a day-to-day basis. Like, right, that's what privilege is. You don't have to think about it. It's just there. But the only reason that I have that is because I was able to stay on my parents' health insurance and they were supportive of me being trans. That I was at a school that was relatively trans-friendly, that I was able to find resources and find people to connect me, right? So, like, the idea of passing is just absolutely tied to all of the other issues that the trans community faces in that, like, if you're part of a marginalized community, right, if you're from a low-income background, the likelihood that you're going to be able to access medical care if you want to access medical care is really low, right, or
yeah.
Safe medical care. And so, you know, a lot of the folks that I know who are trans and are working in the movement have similar stories. Some of them don't if they haven't come from a background of privilege. But that's one of the things that's so frustrating, right, if passing in some ways is directly linked to safety, right? If it's directly linked mm-hmm. to me not being assaulted on the street or me not getting fired from a job, the fact that
right.
I can pass others can't just because I've had access to health care, it's a really frustrating thing. I don't know how better
right.
to articulate it other than that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree with you. I'm hoping that things start to get better, but I feel like healthcare is one of the number one issues. I mean, homelessness, healthcare, these are two, in my opinion, homelessness, healthcare, and then, of course, you have equal opportunity for employment. These are all, I feel, inextricably tied together, and they seriously and just heavily weigh on the trans community. And so I absolutely agree with you, and it's difficult to kind of extricate passing from all of that or being read as how you want to be read from all of that when, you know, if you don't have those kind of safety nets, whether it's social or even a place safe to go every day to lay your head at night or, you know, some way to pay your bills, I mean, you know, passing at that level is, you know, I feel like the more lower income that you are, oftentimes passing can be more important than if you aren't, if you have those kind of privileges. Because of the fact that you can go, well, if these people don't like me because I'm trans, well, then I don't want that job, right? Well, what if it's the only job you can get, right?
Yeah.
And so yeah. I absolutely agree with you. And am, you know, very much in touch with folks that are having that issue right now. I will say that for those of you in the D.C. area, there was a major shift in healthcare today. John, were you involved in some way with some of what's going on with healthcare in D.C.?
No, I wasn't, but a lot of the folks, I was just about to mention that, Eli, just to give a shout-out to the National Center for
Please.
Transgender Equality and the Center for American Progress, Andy Bowen, Kellen Baker, you know, another, oh, goodness, Andy, second Andy whose last name I can't remember, and he'll hate me for it later, but, like,
yeah.
a bunch of really, really incredible people who have been doing advocacy working with the D.C. government, and now all healthcare, the way that I understand it, and I could be wrong, but all healthcare providers, all insurance providers in the District of Columbia have to include gender identity, gender-affirming related coverage. So everything from surgery to hormones, which is
yeah.
incredible and groundbreaking. It's happened in a couple of other locations, but it's definitely big news here in D.C. today.
Yeah, and there was legislation previously that kind of helped with some of the private sector insurances, but I believe that today's movement, the biggest thing that it also included, and I could be wrong, correct me if you know differently, is that it also now includes federal, like, employees and Medicaid and things like that that were kind of, if I'm not mistaken, left out of that last piece of legislation. Previously, the legislation said, if you were going to cover it for cisgender people, you have to cover it for transgender people. You can't not cover it simply because they're trans. Whereas today's legislation took one step further and said, you have to cover SRS, you know, I believe they even use the terminology of SRS procedures, like you said, surgeries and hormones and things like that. And that's a huge step forward for DC, and it's a huge accomplishment for folks like you, who you were talking about with NCTE and Ruby Corrado and Andy Bowen. For our listeners, if you recall, Andy was our guest co-host when she came on to talk about the legislative landscape for the trans community back in, I believe it was November. So folks, our listeners are familiar with Andy, and that was such a great show. And I just always am amazed that the people that I'm friends with, the people that I've worked with, that the things that, that we get done in the District of Columbia and the surrounding areas, it's just been amazing. So you know, I think
I messed up his name, Andrew Cray, Andy Cray, who's a great guy who works at the
I swear, I feel like I am kind of, you know, I know that I won't always be in D.C., and I am just trying to soak it in. The ability to not go very far without running into a host of a wonderful trans community, you know what I mean? And it's one of the things that I've absolutely loved about living in D.C. is that, you know, when you live in other places where the queer community isn't A, as out, B, as accepted, C, as diverse, you kind of run into the same people over and over, which not necessarily is a bad thing, but I feel like I've learned so much from such a rich community of trans and gender nonconforming people in the D.C. metro area. I thank, you know, every higher power. I thank the Lord for the 9 years that I have been here to be able to meet all these people, yourself included, very largely. I absolutely love getting to sit down and talk to you about some of these issues. So thank you for giving our listeners some of the background on that. Before we kind of, because I think that we're at a good place to kind of also talk about some other things about passing, I think that it's probably about time to pay some bills, because I'm a little short on cash. I can't pay for the airtime. So, Anise, is it time to pay some bills on the Back to Us Radio Network?
I think we do need to pay some bills. You know, so you're telling me that this month you're not going to write us a check for all of our expenses?
No, and I'm sorry. I'm not able to sign up for that same deal that you're having Ty go through. I'm not on fries at McDonald's this week either. I apologize. I got too busy. I couldn't do it.
You know, well, Eli, I do have some great news. You know, you won't have to do fries at McDonald's, or you won't have to wash cars in the snow. Do they even wash cars in the snow up there? I've always wondered
that. I hope not. I don't own one, so I couldn't tell you.
You won't have to do either of those things, because Kappa Omega Omicron has paid all of our airtime for the entire year.
That is awesome.
I know.
Thank you for taking that off my shoulders. I know.
Breathe. It's like we can stay on the air, and we don't have to worry about how we're going to pay for it, because Kappa Omega Omicron Fraternity Incorporated wrote us a check to cover our airtime for the entire year. So a huge thank you to the brothers at Kappa Omega Omicron for loving us the way that you do, and for just believing in the show that we are doing. And also, Jen Tape Deck Jetson has launched a brand new business. If you heard the show beat tonight, that is actually one of Jen's customs creations. So Jen does amazing show beats, and he does amazing work, period. He's launching a clothing line. I'm like, oh, my gosh, does this guy ever sleep? So, you know, his new company is it's iWeird.com. It's on the Back to Us Radio page, because we were laughing about it today, because I was like, did you make a typo in naming that? So anyway, check him out. He's on our Back to Us Radio page. Check out Kappa Omega Omicron. And let's see, who else? There was something else. Oh, how could I forget this? Our own LaCara Foster has started a class called Control-Alt-Delete, Reset Your Life, and that starts this Saturday. So, you know, if you want to reset your life, sign up for her class. And tomorrow's show, we're going to the dogs. What does that mean? Well, it's the kickoff of our Puppy Love series for Community Connections. Whew. That's a whole lot of stuff, Eli.
That was a whole lot of stuff.
That was a whole lot. And I did all that without taking a breath. I'm just good.
Your lungs are getting a little bit too big. It must be all that training for that 5K.
I know, right? Oh, yes, I do have my next 5K coming up on the 14th of March, and that's actually going to raise money for one of the charities here in Atlanta. So, and that one is the Bad Prom Run. So I will be in a prom dress running.
Oh, Lord. You
I
ain't
know,
tell me that, girl.
Yeah, we're going to need Jesus to take the wheel on that one. But anyway, guys, phenomenal show tonight. So I'm going to let you all get back now that we paid our bills and thanked our sponsors. And, John, thank you again so much for coming on tonight and just for sharing your words of wisdom. All right.
Thank you, Anise. So, John, you and I, you know, we talked about a couple different, you know, how can passing can kind of affect different folks. And we talked about the privilege of kind of being read as who we feel we are on the inside, and how the world sees us and how maybe that's affected by your socioeconomic status. And I want to shift a little bit and kind of discuss, you know, something that's kind of intertwined is one of the things that I feel like is unfortunate occasionally about the concept of passing is that because so many people put such an emphasis on passing in the trans community, it can do kind of two things. One of the things that it can do is it can set up a hierarchy of who's more trans or not, or who's more of a man or more of a woman, and who that really leaves out in our community, which is happens a lot when you're talking about transitioning, especially medically, or if you're talking about passing, is the folks that are in not subscribing to the gender binary. Our gender queer folks, our gender nonconforming folks, folks that don't necessarily want to take hormones or have surgery, or maybe they want to do a little bit or to a certain degree. And I'd love to talk to you just about how you kind of, you know, you and I both know folks that it's like, you know, we either use third pronouns or doesn't matter which pronoun, or I'm not going to go through surgery. And so I want to know from your perspective, like how you think, or if you've talked to folks about how they kind of relate to that concept of passing when, according to the cis community, they may never, quote unquote, pass or be read as what they truly want to be read as. It's usually male or female, not somewhere in between or anything else. I don't, you know, I'd love to hear your prospect on that. John? Not sure if we lost John or if possibly he is on mute.
Can you hear me?
So, John, yeah, now I can hear you.
Oh, there I am. Sorry about that. So we know that passing is a real thing that people experience, right? That there's this moment or moments where people either pass where they're at or they don't pass. And I'm using, you know, little air quotes, but you can't really see them because, you know,
right,
we're online. part of me, when I was thinking about this today, I was trying to write down kind of what makes up this idea of passing. When you drill down, when you think about it, like what creates this idea that there can be people who pass? And I think that part of that is the idea of a binary gender system, right? That there are people who are men and there are people who are women and there's no one else. And I think the other thing that goes along with that is that there are lots of articles and things written about this, these kind of like idealized standards of beauty or attractiveness, right? That in order to be attractive, if you're a man, you have to look like this. If you're a woman, you have to look like this. And I think those two things come together to create the idea of passing, right? That you have, in order to exist as everybody else exists, you have to fall within the normal range of these two things. And so I think that it makes it incredibly difficult for our friends, our family, who don't necessarily identify with being a man or with being a woman, or if they do, they fall more along the feminine or the masculine spectrum than others who identify as that same gender. it's frustrating. I was talking to my colleague Day a little bit before this, and they were talking about that tension between trying to be who you are and feel good about who you are and being safe and not necessarily falling into either gender. I mean, it's a difficult, or to any gender at all, it's a difficult thing to do, and it's a difficult space to live in. In some ways, I feel really privileged and fortunate that the way that I feel most comfortable is just as like a regular Joe. You know, I wear funny socks. I wear socks with polka dots and stripes, and, you know, I think I have some with dinosaurs on them. And, you know, I have one piercing. But other than that, I'm like a generic-looking dude, and that's how I feel comfortable. There shouldn't – the idea that somehow because I look like a generic guy that I am somehow seen as more acceptable or I'm made more welcome and that I'm literally more safe is really – it's a frustrating, I don't have a better word for it right now. It's something that is incredibly frustrating to think that just because of these random things that I'm safer than someone else that I care about. So I don't know if that actually answers the question that you asked, but there we go.
I think it absolutely does. And I think that you basically touched on something that I wholeheartedly agree with, and that's that very often when you start to tease apart the ends of what, and it's not necessarily what I mean when I say this, is not necessarily that when you say, if you say, I want to pass, that you're meaning this, but oftentimes when the cisgender community or non-trans folks read someone as one or the other, what they're really picking up on is social cues that they have been taught that are, this is what a man looks like and this is what a woman looks like, right? And it reinforces those gender stereotypes. And quite honestly, not only can it negatively impact our gender nonconforming friends that don't identify as either male or female, it can negatively affect the ones that do identify as male or female. You know, I have several friends that, whether they be cis or trans, gay or straight, or bisexual or intersex, that they identify as male or female, but they don't necessarily look like what society says is a proper or correct or acceptable male or female. Like you were talking about, you feel most comfortable as an everyday Joe. I know a guy that likes to run around in pink tutus, and he identifies as male, wholeheartedly, male pronouns, he, him, his, not, you know, he does not consider himself genderqueer. He is a man that loves to run around in skirts and pink tutus and makeup occasionally, and sometimes jeans and boots, and that should be okay. But what is it that constitutes what's appropriate for male versus female, right? And so I think that can kind of reinforce those gender stereotypes. I have to agree with you that I also have that privilege that I feel most comfortable with, you know, my facial hair is something that my wife doesn't necessarily always like, but she advocates for me to keep it because when I shave it off, people wonder if she's my mother. You know, that's happened before. And I'm okay with looking like I was identified as male at birth and being more masculine than feminine. That's the way I'm most comfortable. So I agree, I share that privilege with you that I feel that way. But, you know, I have some mannerisms that, being raised by a lot of Italian women, I talk a lot with my hands and I do things like that. And I've had people tell me, you know, I know that you've said something about being read, you know, you get read as a man like you want, but you're read as a gay man, which you said you don't have a problem with. But let me tell you, a lot of times it's because you talk with your hands. And I'm like, and I literally used my hands and told that person, well, that's not going to change. Right. Like I'm not going to draw a line between who I am and say this part of me is okay and this part of me I have to put away. Now, yeah. Do I recognize those things when I don't feel safe? Absolutely. But that's when survival kicks in and not, oh, it's not right for me to be this person, right? So, you know, absolutely, I agree with you. And, yes, it did kind of, you know, it's not necessarily a did this answer the question? No, yeah, it's just I believe that that's a big part of the discussion, and it's something that I don't think that a lot of people realize. You know, I think that a lot of people just take these weird cues that tell them that's not right or that's not what I expected, and they slap a label on it. I'm about to show my age either positive or negatively, but I was surfing through Facebook, I think it was today or yesterday, and I saw an article or a blog post written by someone who's on this season's episode of, what is it, Real World? Which, I got to be honest, I didn't even know that show still existed, so that's what I mean by I'm about to show my age. I haven't seen that show in God knows how long, decades, right? That was a mid-90s show for me, right, on MTV, and apparently this is someone who identifies as a lesbian of color, and because she's tall and has an athletic build and is thin in certain places where most women of color are not, people like there's all these internet rumors swirling around saying that she's got to be trans. And at first, when she heard that, it really bothered her. But it wasn't because she was like, ew, trans people. It's like, no, I'm me. Please don't put a label on me that doesn't belong there. And what I loved about the blog post was that she basically said that, you know, I am not trans. And having just been mislabeled this one time, that was frustrating for me because people didn't see me as I am and as I felt I was. I can't imagine what it must be like to constantly be misgendered and mislabeled the way that my trans brothers and sisters are. And this was something that her friends kind of talked her through and kind of, and she was just like, it was this realization for her in that, you know, she didn't like being labeled something that she wasn't, but she said that it was a learning experience for her and a chance for her to learn more about another group of the LGBTQ community. And I'm not sure if you had heard about that, but I was just, it was really great and heartening to see something written by a cisgender person that said all the things that most trans people are saying in blogs all the time.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and your question earlier about the hierarchy made me think about Laverne Cox. Laverne Cox is this incredible trans woman. She's a black trans woman. She's an actress. She's on Orange is the New Black. And she actually just did the keynote at the Task Force's Creating Change Conference. The whole thing is up on YouTube if folks want to search for it. But one of the things that she kept saying over and over is that loving trans women, and she said this in a couple different ways, but loving trans women of color is a revolutionary act. And there's this idea, you know, the trying to sort us by saying, you know, who passes more or who's had this surgery or who takes hormones and that makes them a real trans person. First of all of our experiences are different. What we need, what we want, those are all different. But I sometimes get frustrated when people say we should just love everyone and like that will solve all the problems in the world. But I think Laverne has it right. Like the act of loving and supporting and investing in trans women and investing in trans men and investing in trans people of color, that is revolutionary because that's not something that society does, right?
That's right.
If we do that, that is revolutionary. That is something that makes a difference. That's something that supports someone and helps them move forward, whether or not they fit into society's definition of what passing is or what respectable is or what everybody else thinks they should be doing. Loving and supporting each other in a real substantive way makes a difference.
Yeah. No, I absolutely agree. And I also absolutely agree in your characterization of Laverne Cox. I was privileged enough to meet her when she came into town, and she's just a remarkable human being. And between her and Carmen Carrera and Janet Mock, like, I am loving the fact that right now the people in the media, the trans people in the media that are getting the most coverage in the last several weeks have been trans women of color. And the reason I absolutely that that's so heartening to me is that that is the portion of our community that is murdered the most and that is subject to the most physical discrimination and things like that. And so I wholeheartedly agree that it is such a revolutionary act because, like you said, not only is it not something that society does, but when you make a step or you make a choice or it just is in you to love and support not only trans people, but especially trans people of color, that is what flies in the face of the statistics that are saying that so many people are committing suicide and being murdered, and most of them are trans women of color, right? And so it is a revolutionary act, like she says, because it can – an act of love, and I don't just mean a – oh, yeah, they're fine with me. If that's all that is within you, that's fine. That's better than outwardly hating someone or discriminating. But that taking that step and taking an action that is loving and supportive and, you know, does something for another person in our community just uplifts so much of the other community, right? It's kind of like that whole random act of kindness and saving the world one random act at a time and things like that, because those are the little things that start to change things, and those are the things that are going to start to hopefully change some of those horrifying statistics of the trans community. I absolutely agree. And, I think that we've talked around and round about some of these issues several times in shows on the Strong Stance. We've had a show about privilege where we talked about, you know, and we've touched on it tonight because they're so inextricably connected. Last month we talked about the concept of not only outing someone, but the concept of post-transition and how we relate to that. And I feel like, you know, transition, whether you're talking about medically or legally or the concept of post-transition and the concept of privilege and passing, it's just, I feel very privileged to be able to talk about things like that and not have to worry about where's my next meal going to come from, because right now I'm unemployed because the last time I was employed and somebody found out I was trans, I got fired and there was no laws protecting me where I was living. And I think that, you know, people like Laverne Cox and Janet Mock and other people, you and Ruby Corrado and Mara Kiesling and Andy Bowen and all these people that are doing this work are out there trying to not only make this place safer for folks so that we don't have to rely so much on quote-unquote passing for safety reasons, but it also just makes our community happier and healthier, and it feels like it's growing because people feel like they're safe enough now to come out in all different kinds of regards.
I think one really good example of that, I mentioned Jen Richards earlier. She helps with Tony D'Orsay run the Trans 100. I think the Trans 100 is a really good example of this. But I also think We Happy Trans, which is a website, blog, Tumblr type thing. I know how to use Facebook, but the rest of it is a little complicated for me. So Jen and some others organized We Happy Trans so that trans folks can go either answering in text form, right, answering in an email or answering via a kind of a video blog, answering 7 questions and talking about their lives in a positive way. I think that sort of thing, right, to take it back to passing, right, to this idea that having people like Janet Mock, having people like Laverne Cox, having people like Mara Kiesling and Mason Davis from the Transgender Law Center, like having folks like that in the public eye creates more room and more space for trans people to be different, right, to be who we are. And for other people, non-trans people, or sometimes even, you know, people who are in the lesbian, gay, and bi community to accept us because they're seeing a varied representation of us in the media. That's one of the reasons I love We Happy Trans. It's one of the reasons I love the Trans 100, because we have to lift up our own community, and both of those things does that, right? It gives us mentors, it gives us people to look up to, and it gives us an idea of the plentiful resources that are out there. They're going to have 200 trans people who are doing incredible work around the country. So I know that a lot of folks who are doing the national work get named a lot, but you know, the folks who are all over the country who are doing this work deserve a lot of the credit, and they're making it possible for us to have to pass less and for us to just get to exist more.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to agree with you. I learned so much about so many different things that were going on, as I had mentioned before, by reading that Trans 100 last year. And it was just so amazing because you learn about someone that's doing something on another coast or in the middle of the country in a place where you didn't think there was much going on with the trans community. And I absolutely agree. I had heard of We Happy Trans. I haven't actually seen it. I haven't been there in person, and it's definitely something that now knowing a little bit more about it, I will definitely go back to. One of the things, you know, that I just want to kind of reinforce, that I try to reinforce in every show, is that, you know, we've been talking a lot about the positives and negatives of passing and does it set up a hierarchy and reinforcing gender stereotypes and all that kind of stuff. And oftentimes within the trans community, we talk about that in relation to people outside of the trans community. Cisgender people, non-trans people, and how they see people and how they treat trans people. But honestly, it has to start within our own walls. We have our own issues in various parts of the trans community in creating hierarchies or saying that this person isn't trans enough or saying that this person is just, you know, oh, that person just looks like a lesbian, that, you know, that's not really a trans person, or, oh, I just don't get these gender queer people, you're one or the other, like pick, or, you know what I mean, or putting more emphasis on someone who transitioned 10 years ago versus someone who just realized, you know, how they're really starting to feel inside. And we have to lead by example. And I think that things like what you're talking about not only the Trans 100, but We Happy Trans and other communities like that have to be supportive and uplifting, and you know, when Laverne Cox says to love a trans woman, especially trans woman of color, is a revolutionary act, I feel like it's sometimes even a revolutionary act within our own community. It is amazing to me, and it happens in every community, how much there can be inside hate. And, you know, we have to start getting over these issues because, like you said, it does give us more space to exist because you see that varying degree of who we are. The trans community is like every other community on the planet in that we are a diverse group of people. We are just as diverse as cis folks. We are just as diverse as the lesbian community or the gay community or the bisexual community. You know, there's no one way to be trans. There's no one way to transition. There's no one way to be to live your life to the fullest, as long as it's your choice to do so. And you're just, you know, not harming anybody else and just trying to be happy with me and in my own skin. So, I mean, you know, I really just want to, again, thank you so much for not only the work that you do, because you do such amazing work. And I think that that's evidenced by, you know, it's one thing to be part of the Trans 100, dude, but you were part of the inaugural Trans 100. Like, it was the first one before really anybody knew it was existing. And I was just, it's so great to know that there were 100 people, and you know that there was a ton more that weren't selected because it was, you know, at 100. It's so great to know that there are 100 people doing this kind of work, and that's chip off the block. Like, we haven't even scratched the surface on the number of people that do this kind of stuff. And, you know, so with that, whether you think that passing is important for you or not important for you, if you hate the word, if you're fine with the word, you know, we're not trying to discuss this to try to say this is just absolutely wrong. All opinions matter. All opinions have merit. I personally am going to start to try to make an active thought every time I go to use the word passing, and maybe try to think of another word or how does it affect someone or have more of these conversations. But, you know, to go back to what I was saying about having that many people doing this work, we need more. We always need more, because the more people that there are, like you said, the more space it creates. And so to that end, I know that you work with a company. I know that you're here as an individual. You're not representing your company, but I know that your organization does have foundations and fellowships and things like that. And I'd love for you to tell some of our listeners about any kind of positions or fellowships or whatever's going on with Victory right now.
Sure. So Victory is an organization that does a lot of leadership development for LGBT-identified folks. A couple of things that we have open right now, there's a fellowship, a congressional fellowship, where the person who's selected will get to work on Capitol Hill for Congress for the LGBT Equality Caucus for a year. The position is paid. It's really incredible. So if any of you are ever thinking about, I would like to work for Congress, this is a great opportunity. We also have something called the Presidential Appointments Project, where we work to help get out LGBT-identified folks appointed in the federal administration. And then one of the last thing about Victory that I want to mention is we have something called the Candidate and Campaign Training, where we teach folks the basics of how to run for office and how to run for office as an out person, whether you're out in trans or out in gay, out in bi, out in lesbian.
So that's amazing.
Yeah, it's incredible. So we have one in Kansas City that's coming up in a few weeks. We have two others, one in Portland and then one in Washington, D.C. in December. If folks are interested in any of those trainings, you should feel free to go to the victoryinstitute.org. All of the information's up there. And then the one thing that I do in my personal time outside of Victory, I've created a Facebook group called the Trans Justice Hub. I think if you just search Trans Justice Hub, it's three different words. You'll be able to find it. It's a space for trans folks who are involved in justice work to kind of share resources, talk about opportunities, and share jobs so that we're making sure, just like the Trans 100 and We Happy Trans, that we're lifting each other up and making space for each other. Other than that, if there's ever any way that I can be helpful to folks, please don't hesitate to reach out to me. I think my email's on the website at Victory, and if not, you can find me on Facebook. I have my name is a very unique spelling, so you should feel free to find me on there too.
Yeah, and for those of you that for whatever reason can't find John, if you're friends with me on Facebook or if you like the Back to Us Radio page, we can get you in contact with John. And, John, you even started a listserv, an email listserv for trans-positive, jobs, places that were cool with trans folks for those folks that were looking for employment. Like, I really wonder when you sleep or when you see Pre. And, it's just amazing all the things that you have done. So if anyone's interested in any of those things, please feel free to either try to track down John or track down me and we can get you in touch. But I just want to thank you again, John, so much for joining us and sharing your experiences and your thoughts with the Back to Us Radio listeners tonight and making a strong stance stronger, with me one show at a time. So I really appreciate it. And for those of you that are listening for the first time or for the fourth time, you will catch us again next month. It's always the fourth Thursday of the month for the Strong Stance. I want to thank all of our listeners for being here tonight and taking part in listening to this. And feel free, as always, to send us your comments, your love, your questions. And John, I appreciate everything, and I hope you'll join us again sometime.
Absolutely. It was my complete pleasure. Thank you so much for having me on.
Absolutely. And to the rest of the Back to Us Radio Network, we love you as always, and have a wonderful night.
You have been listening to a recording provided by Voice Republic at http://voicerepublic.com.